Welcome to the South Carolina State Library's podcast, Library Voices SC. I'm Curtis Rogers, Communications Director, and today I'm pleased to have with us in our studio Debbie Bloom. Debbie is the manager of the Walker Local and Family History Center at the Richland Library here in Columbia, South Carolina. She is a genealogist with an interest in family history, and her blog is cleverly named The Dead Librarian. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here today.
Glad to have you here. Tell us a little bit about how you first got interested in genealogy.
So I've thought about this question all my life, and now I get to answer it.
Okay.
I'm really excited. My grandmother was the one who really got me interested in genealogy, and I have a clear memory of being in fifth grade and talking to my teacher about my first cousin three times removed. I don't know. I can't remember. But her name is Frances Folsom, and she was Grover Cleveland's wife. And my teacher and I had this great conversation how we looked up information on her in the encyclopedia, and we really got into it together. And I think that's really where it started, was Grandma telling me stories and then my teacher helping me research those stories. It was fun.
That's really cool. Did you use the library, or how did you go about doing all that research?
So, I mean, in those days, we had a set of encyclopedias in every room, probably two or three sets. So we just explored the encyclopedias. And then the research part of it for me really didn't start till I was in college. And I had a sister-in-law who did a lot of genealogy, and she's like, you got to look at census records. And I'm like, whoa, fun. Let's do it. So
that's like me. I think every family probably has someone who has a great interest in their family history. Like I had a great aunt who, she did all of our family history on that side. And, you know, I had an interest, but it was kind of like, well, Aunt Catherine has already done all this, you know.
People say that to me a lot. And I always tell them that things have changed so much. Like I had one line that was had been done many years ago. It was an old New England line. And so I never worked on it. But a few years ago, I was like, well, let me just see what there is. And it was just so much fun to re-find and to find new stuff. So I would say just ignore all that other stuff. They probably did bad research anyways.
You never know. What's been the most unique, maybe interesting thing you have found out about your own family history?
Well, as you know, recently through DNA, I found my Irish family, and that had always been sort of a secret. My great-grandmother did not want to talk about her family, so we knew she was Irish because she had an Irish accent, but anything else about her, we didn't know. And she tended to prevaricate, as my grandmother would say. This was her mother. And the records were confusing because she would change her name. So I had she had aliases. I don't even know why. I don't even think I want to know why. But through the DNA, we were able to find the connection to Ireland. So I have second cousins over there, and we've gone over there and visited, and it's been really intriguing.
That's amazing. That's like, I've been thinking about doing that myself, and I more than likely will. And you said you had used the Ancestry DNA.
So I tell people DNA, it's like you would use a census record. So DNA is a tool. You should use it just like a census record.
If someone was interested in doing, in getting their DNA, what is it called? Just get your DNA tested. What would be your recommendations?
First, you have to have a family tree, because the DNA is just going to say, yeah, you're Irish, or yeah, you're British. But in Ancestry, anyways, you want to have the tree so that you can, I can connect with someone who we have a strong DNA connection and see who's on their tree and how we're connected. Otherwise, it's just general information.
So like all the other services that you hear advertised, they're just giving you your ethnic background?
Yes.
Okay.
I've only used Ancestry. So I think what I'm going to do next is family tree DNA and do my father's DNA. And I think that there's Well, I don't know. I haven't used it yet, but mm-hmm. I think that there's a way of at least connecting with people, mm-hmm. if not with their trees. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a different type of DNA test. That would be Ancestry's autosomal, and the one through Family Tree DNA would be a Y chromosome test, mm-hmm. which is a little more in depth, I mm-hmm. guess. But now we're getting. I'm putting myself to sleep.
Well, I have an interesting little story that I had when it was very crude, before the DNA testing got popular. I had posted on my Ancestry account on my tree a document that included going back on my father's side, you know, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grand. And this guy in Toronto, Canada, found that, came across it. And he's a much better genealogical researcher than I, and sent me a message through Ancestry and said, "Hi there, cousin," and explained to me that my father's mother was his father's father, brother and sister. So they were, and I didn't even know my father's mother, my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, had any siblings. She, you know, uh-huh. no one ever talked about it.
So you shared a great-great something, grandparent.
Well, my grandmother and his grandfather were brother and sister. So,
right. So you know. Their parents is who you share.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's very cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
And, it's fun to connect.
And so I can only imagine with doing the DNA how, you know, with that kind of automation, how you would actually find a whole lot more.
And it's great to connect with on email, because then if they seem a little crazy, you can just not answer it.
Right. That is true. That is a perk. So what's your connection to South Carolina? I know that you came to South Carolina from New York State.
I did. So I moved here, and my father likes to golf.
Ah.
So from Rochester to Myrtle Beach.
There you go.
In the early 80s, and then I came to Columbia in 1992. I've struggled for decades to find South Carolina ancestors. Mm. And I'm getting closer. I've gotten to North Carolina. Mm. So that's been fun, and I've kind of connected with those people. And so I'm happy that I'm getting closer and closer.
Mm-hmm.
To
interesting.
South Carolina.
That's very interesting. While you were here doing a training session for us,
yep.
which, by the way, thank you very much, Debbie Bloom came and taught a genealogy resources course here for the general public at the South Carolina State Library. But just following up on that, what kinds of websites did you explore? And by the way, we're posting your presentation on our State Library website, and we'll have the link to that on this podcast episode. But what kinds of websites did you explore?
So, of course, you know, as I've been in the local history room 10 years, and as we've seen, people want to research online from home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more and more and more. And the more you get into it, the more you have to kind of research from home, because your family tree just grows and you find people in every state. So the purpose of the class that we did here was just to talk about resources that you are available to South Carolinians, either free or with a library card.
Mm.
So free, those would also be free, but they might be limited. So we talked about Heritage Quest, mm-hmm. which most public libraries carry and has census records, exactly the same census records as Ancestry. We talked about NewsBank, which through the South Carolina State Library, if you have a library card, you have access to historical South Carolina newspapers. We talked about the South Carolina Archives website and many other websites that offer free content, some limited, like the Archives website. It might just be indexed and you've got to go there to get it, or you can contact them and they'll send it to you for a fee. But it's nice to be able to do some work from home. It will save you money and it will save you travel time.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't get the exact primary document, you don't see it online, at least you know what to ask for, and mm-hmm. that will save you time when you're requesting things from different institutions.
One of the things I think I find confusing about genealogical research is having watched many episodes of Who Do You Think You Are, seeing the famous person, you know, taking time to travel and then getting to that library or organization, and they sit down with a laptop and say, okay, now we're going to go to Ancestry. It's like, you could have done that from home. So when is it necessary that you actually do have to travel?
Well, I always tell people that no matter where I travel, I look at the public library website and see what databases they have that maybe I could access that I don't have access to here, or that I don't have access to because I don't want to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So like newspapers.com, I pay for it now, but before then I would go to a library if I was visiting home or visiting Phoenix, Arizona or something like that, and seeing what they would have. Mostly Ancestry is going to be good for maybe antebellum records forward. When you start getting into colonial records, mm-hmm. you might have to go start visiting an institution.
Is that just because those types of records have yet to be digitized, or?
Yeah, they're not digitized, or they're not transcribed, so they're not. They might be digitized, but you can't keyword search them and see. Mm. You don't even know. If you can't search the document, you don't even know your person's in it. Mm. You might have to go to the Bloom collection to find mm-hmm. it in there. Mm-hmm. Also, not like in New York State, the death certificate index is online, but mm-hmm. the death certificates themselves are not online. Mm. So you're either going up to your county in New York or Albany to get those death certificates, or you're going to pay your $20 per death certificate. So it's up to you if you're going up that way anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, you might want to just go to your local county and get the death certificate. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of records that are only indexed. They are not connected to the digital content. Hmm. So you might have to road trip then.
And one of the things you mentioned is the transcription of any document so that they could be keyword searched. And, you know, when you look at a lot of those old documents, they're usually in a handwriting that sometimes is undecipherable, and mm-hmm. you really have to, you know, squint and hold it away to try to figure out mm-hmm. what it is. Is there anything, any kind of new developments with maybe software or the optical character recognition, the OCR software, that maybe does a better job now of transcribing that handwriting?
Yes. So the OCR is the optical character recognition software, and that can go through a book, a typed document, and read the image and then put that image into words. There has been some experimentation with handwriting, mm-hmm. OCR that will do handwriting. But the quality control mm. almost makes it not worth it.
Still
right
need a
now.
Human intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We even have trouble, like we have digitized the a copy of the Confederate rolls, mm-hmm. which is a roster of Confederate soldiers. There's a copy in the archive, but we have another copy. It's not the same copy. It has a little bit different information. But we've digitized it, and it's typed. Or it's typed and paginated, mm. as Wade Dorsey would say at the archive. Mm. But the OCR couldn't even read that typing very well. We're going to have to go back in there, and I think we're going to make a project to transcribe that, because mm-hmm. the OCR, the quality control, we'd have to go back and fix so much. Mm-hmm. We might as well just start from scratch. Mm-hmm.
As we're talking, some of the things that are popping into my head about genealogical research are like working with foreign names. Half of my family came from Portugal, and it gets very difficult to, you know, see those name changes, and you have to understand how in a foreign country how the last names actually work, because they might work differently. You know, it might, your great-grandmother and your great-grandfather might have not even used the same last name. Mm-hmm. So what kinds of advice do you give to people about maybe working with foreign last names?
So we don't have a lot of immigrant sort of ancestors in South Carolina, just maybe early
Irish English
revolutionary. But I do have immigrant ancestors who may have crossed over at Ellis Island. And yeah, there are a lot of name changes. Sometimes the naturalization records will help with that. Of course, if they're women, they don't help that much. Honestly, I think DNA is a tool to help with that.
Really?
You know, you might connect with somebody who's, you would never even think it was that last name.
Mm-hmm.
But especially as the DNA testing goes international. So, you know, when it starts getting into Spain and Italy mm-hmm. and they start getting testing from those people and you see really great matches, that's going to help clear up some of that along the way.
Well, that brings up another question. I know, you know, having had a paid ancestry account when I was kind of really more into it than I am now, you kind of get to this point where you're going back so far, you're like, I don't know these people. How in the world can I trust this information? How can I, you know, just because maybe the last names are the same and I get a leaf, you know, there's a leaf wiggling over here, so ooh, that's something. But how do you, I don't know how to put it, but how do you say, okay, this is a definite, you know, ancestor versus something that maybe the software is just recommending?
So, of course, your documentation is going to be a key for that. I have a line that goes back to Daniel Boone, and I was like, okay, this is just a family story, right?
You're right.
And even, like, I found something that kind of connected it, and I popped that name in, and it doesn't really match all the family histories I see about Daniel Boone.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Daniel Boone hits on my DNA are some of the biggest hits, numerous hits I have.
Really?
And I'm like, okay, I'm going with what I have here. I think that this line is correct. I'm hitting with all these other people, and we share that Boone, Squire Boone ancestor. I have another line, the carrier line, that I've stopped at a certain point because there's not enough DNA out there to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And the DNA that is connecting to family trees is all screwed up. I don't trust it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, I'm just not adding any information to my tree until I've worked through it. And a lot of times I'll go to ancillary family, like brothers and sisters, and try to, sometimes I'll try to sort through it through a back door, and I'll take a guess. You can put a guess on ancestry. I used to get really upset because trees were wrong on ancestry, and then I was like, well, I'm just going to put this name up here as a guess and see if it hits.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm less angry with people who do that, because I might put a little question mark there, say test or something like that, to let people know that I'm not sure, but I'm just seeing, I'm seeing what the DNA brings to the table and what other people's what their trees have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 9 times out of 10, their trees do not have good documentation.
Really?
They've just taken it from something else. So then I'm like, all right, we still got to work on this.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a work in progress.
That's why it does seem like it's always a work in progress, because it's so difficult at certain times to really triangulate and verify that one tidbit of information.
But it's so groovy when you get something, and it's always going to be a tidbit.
Right, right.
It's always going to be a tidbit.
Yeah. Well, maybe you'll get me back into it with your enthusiasm. One of the things that I have heard, and I don't know if we've ever discussed this, but it seems like I have heard someone say, so I don't remember 100%, but that with all of the DNA tests that are going on now, a lot of people are seeing a tiny, tiny percentage of Mongolian or Asian Mongol relationship. And someone or somewhere I had read said something about, well, you know, Attila the Hun was going around and the Huns were pillaging and raping left and right over Eurasia. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's any truth to that. Have you seen anything or come across anything?
Well, of course, you know I came up with the Iberian online, so right. I decided we were related. There's a website called GEDmatch, and you can upload your raw DNA. Whoever does DNA on Ancestry should download their raw DNA.
And what is that, GED, J-E-D?
GEDmatch.com.
Okay.
So you download your DNA from whatever site you have used, and then you upload it into GEDmatch, which is a free site.
Mm-hmm.
There is a premium fee
right,
you could pay,
mm-hmm.
and I'll pay it. Like, if I'm going to tool with it for that month, I'll pay it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can easily not pay it, and it's like $10.
Mm-hmm.
But they have all this different stuff in there. Like, you can see if you have any Neanderthal DNA.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know about if there's Mongolian in there, but they have all kinds of groovy little just playing around. Whoa, whoa.
Uh-huh.
Do I have any Neanderthals? So, and it's free.
Uh-huh.
So I would say try that and see if anything pops up there. Maybe they have a Mongolian thing on there. I don't know.
That's an incentive because, you know, I think a lot of people maybe think that if you use the Ancestry DNA, you're only going to be able to use it in Ancestry. But with this, you're saying that you can take what you've received from Ancestry DNA mm-hmm. and uploaded into something else.
Yeah, and then so are other people. So mm-hmm. there's people uploading their DNA from My Family Tree. They're uploading it from 123. They're uploading it from Ancestry.
Okay.
So all of a sudden, I'm able to see all kinds of connections.
Ah.
And it tells you the strength of your connection.
Okay.
Now, usually, I can go in there, and the first 10, I know exactly who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once in a while, something pops up, and you're like, woo, I got to figure this out. So, and then their email address is there.
That's the really cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, GEDmatch. It's awesome.
I'm going to have to try that mm-hmm. out. Tell us a little bit about your blog. I love the title called The Dead Librarian. How long have you been doing that, and how did you come up with that title?
Yeah, I think I've been doing the blog about 10 years. And when I was working in the periodicals department, I did a lot of genealogy there,
mm-hmm.
helping people look through the state newspaper for obituaries. And inevitably, if somebody would say, what are you doing? I'd say, I'm looking up the dead. And so eventually, I decided that we don't have any one-stop shopping in South Carolina online website for SC resources.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided we needed that, and I was going to call it The Dead Librarian. Mm-hmm. I don't post on there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I only post when I have something to say. I'm
mm-hmm.
not going to – I don't garble.
Mm-hmm.
But people use it mostly for a list of easy-to-get-to South Carolina resources for local history – for South Carolina history or genealogical history.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just Google Dead Librarian, it'll pop right up. It's the first thing.
That's great. So all those resources that you talked about in the training session you provided here, those are available there as well.
Yeah. Also on there is the webinars that you and I did on Heritage Quest
mm-hmm.
and Newsbank.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really in-depth look at how to use those mm-hmm. resources.
Great. Tell us a little bit about the Walker Local History Collection. What's that all about? Has it been with Richland Library the whole time? Or?
Yeah, it's been with Richland Library over on Sumter Street.
Mm.
And Anne Locke was, I think, the first genealogical librarian. She was also a director of the library. We're now in our newly renovated space mm-hmm. on the first floor of the main library. And the print collection is very South Carolina, Richland County specific.
Mm-hmm.
But what we really spend a lot of time on is our digital resources.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an obituary index, and that has over 1 million records. We have a local magazine index. We have a photograph collection. We now are the depository for the state newspaper photo archive.
Mm.
So we've got about 1,300 of those images digitized
wow.
and up there. We also have a yearbook collection. So we've been putting up Richland County High School yearbooks, and we're always looking for donations of those. So anybody who has a yearbook from Richland County that's just laying around collecting dust, we would like to make a home for it.
And that's important, I think, in genealogical research, those kinds of resources that maybe people don't tend to think of as being, you know, a wealth of information, but something like a high school yearbook.
It's one of our most popular collections.
Really?
Online, statistically anyways. Mm-hmm. People are using it all the time. We've also been able to have some great collaborations with it, like the Booker T. Washington Reunion Group helped bring to us Booker T. Washington yearbooks. Mm. So we were able to get a bunch of those digitized. Mm-hmm. Hopkins has a similar group, the Hopkins High School, and they brought us the yearbooks. We scanned them, and we were able to return them. But now they're available to people all over the world.
It really does make the world a lot smaller to be able to have access to all that information. Now, with the South Carolina Digital Library, scmemory.org, are those available through that as well, or just through the Richland Library website?
It's a great question, Curtis. Yes, the South Carolina Memory harvests our material, so it's in their collection. And then the Digital Public Library of America harvests from SC Memory. So you'll find all of our stuff in the Digital Public Library of America digital online collection.
Great. And that's dpla.org, I think.
dpla.org, yeah.
Yeah, great. So who were the Walkers?
The Walkers were cotton merchants at the turn of the century. And the brothers, they all served in World War II together, and they were very generous in supporting the Walker Room and for leaving a legacy for us to use for, you know, we've used it for purchasing materials for the digital collection, stuff that we can really, you know, tell the story of Richland County, but also people just want to go online and see stuff, you know? And so we really, we're all about accessibility and making sure that our Richland County residents can access what's in the local history room as well as people all over the place.
Do you ever, maybe in your recollection, what's the farthest away you think someone has come to the Walker Local History Room? To do research.
Oh, to do research. I was going to say, there's someone who lives in England who emails me all the time. And she's a Lower Richland
Has a connection.
Resident. Yeah. Okay. And so she, or former resident, so she emails me all the time about, what can I do to find this and what can I do to find that? Her last question was about records at the South Carolina State Hospital. And so I was able to direct her to the archives for that. Visiting, I mean, I know we've had people from California, all over the United States. I'm trying to think if we've had anybody. I know Texas. I can't think of anybody internationally that we've had visit, but someone will say to me, don't you remember blah, blah, blah? And I'll be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it goes. So what kind of other special projects maybe will you be working on related to genealogical research or with the library?
So we're starting a statewide project with public library, local history rooms, and historical societies to transcribe the 1868 voter registration that the state library digitized. This is an important record because it was done by the Freedmen Bureau. So it helps us break that 1870 brick wall that our African-American researchers have. They can get to the 1870 census, but it's hard to get earlier than that because their ancestors would have been slaves in the 1860 census. So this gets us two more years into the 1860s and closer to where our slave ancestors probably were building communities. Mm-hmm. And but it also is a rendering of white ancestors too. It did mm-hmm. black and white males, of course, mm-hmm. no women, because mm-hmm. they could not vote.
Uh-huh. Sorry.
But it's an important record, and it's all handwritten, and it's by county, or at least the counties that were around in 1868. Mm-hmm. So we're getting, Richland County has been transcribed, and we're, the transcriptions will help people to go into that database, that website, and type in a name and see what names pop up. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to working on that this summer. I'll have a chapter coming out about the transcription projects we've done at Richland Library in a book called Genealogy and the Librarian, Research, Instruction, Outreach, and Management. It's edited by Carol Smallwood. And I think it'll be a great resource for local history rooms, and it'll be out this summer, and I'll right. have a chapter in that. I also have a chapter coming out in Women's Diaries and Letters of the South about a woman I've done research on, Henrietta Aiken Kelly. She was a sericulturalist.
What's that?
She was involved in silk farming in the turn of the century. And she was a Department of Agriculture employee. Hmm. And she actually became involved in sericulture. She went to Europe to study. And she was like 52. And I'm like, ooh, I love it.
Wow.
That she changed her whole life at 52.
Yeah.
So she's an interesting woman, and I was able to do some research and had a chapter accepted about her. So those two things will be coming up, and then the 1868 transcription project.
Wow, that's fascinating. It seems like it's never ending. You know, you can always find something to do research about, because once you start delving in, you start unraveling the stories.
That's right. Yeah, and there's a lot of untold stories, mm-hmm. especially about women and African Americans, that still need to be told, researched and told. Mm-hmm. And we have so many great resources available now that we really can tell their stories.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's I find fascinating, is when those stories get uncovered. So thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
And thank you to our listeners. You can find Library Voices SC on Podbean, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, or add us on your favorite podcast app. Our podcast website address is librarycast.podbean.com. We love hearing from our listeners, so send us your comments and suggestions for future topics. Library Voices SC is the official podcast of the South Carolina State Library. Until next time, this is Curtis Rogers. Thanks for listening.